Connie DeFranco. Your memoir, No Walls, and The Recurring Dream was published in May, so we will definitely be talking about that. But you're also headlining Salmon Fest this weekend in Nanilchik. Boy, I really loved hearing about the early days and just imagining you in all these tiny places, empty places, playing to indifferent people.
Yeah. Tell you what, though, I sort of miss the days of winning people over.
Yeah.
There's something to that, you know, that I've been out there and the audience, you know, building an audience for a long time. And so now I sort of can walk into a welcoming atmosphere. But back in the day when I was just walking in cold, there's something to that that I kind of relish, that I kind of miss, you know, because it's much more like the rest of the world, you know, where you just show up as strangers and then it's like, what do you do with that? What can you, you know, how can you transform that into connection? Anyway, I do kind of dig those when those moments pop up again, you know, where I'm a little more anonymous and I get to just start clean. Who are you? Who am I? Let's do this, you know?
I can imagine that would be refreshing. And I did have a question about that. When you, as you wrote your memoir and you're looking back on your life, was there any time that you would go back to and live again if you could, either changing your choices or just enjoying it?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things I would do differently in hindsight, like any stumbling, fumbling human. I guess maybe if I were to distill it down to one thing right now, I would tell myself to just slow down, just slow down, just calm down, you know, take your time, you know. I think I would have done well to step away, you know, a little more when things were really frantic and I was everywhere at once and there were so many demands on me and it took me a long time to learn how to say maybe, let alone no. No, I think I need some me time, or no, that's too much, or no, here's my parameters, you know.
That's pretty good advice coming from present Ani. Would past Ani have listened to present Ani?
Yeah, right. Well, that's the trick. I'm sure past Ani would not have listened for a second.
Obviously, you're very well known for being a feminist and an activist, just as much as being a musician. I wanted to ask, what kind of activism is important to you now? What are you dedicating your efforts to?
Women's rights and reproductive freedom in particular are always in the forefront of my mind and my work. You know, this rolling back of women's rights rather than continuing to expand them and pursue equality is very, terrifying and devastating to me. You know, I mean, to think of all the individual women whose lives will be devastated, and to think of the macro effect on society of pushing women down and down, it hurts all of us, you know, and our sort of, I think our collective evolution is thwarted when we prevent women from becoming themselves. Reproductive freedom is something I've just been talking about a lot on stage these days. Another thing that's really in the forefront for me is this sort of human rights crisis in America called mass incarceration. We have 2 million people living in cages right now in America, and we have more people in prison than any other country in the world, which is extraordinary if you think about all the countries in the world and how we tend to put ourselves above so many in terms of the human rights, quotient, and yet secretly, sort of behind the scenes, we have a complete human rights crisis on our hands. So anyway, I've been working for a few years on this, what we have come to call the Prison Music Project, and it's a record that's going to be coming out in the spring of all songs written by people in prison, and there's a whole lot of singers and musicians and producers involved in the record, and so anyway, when it comes out, I hope it will be a tool for me to, you know, sort of try to help propel the conversation about this crisis that's happening in America.
That's amazing. That's a really cool project.
Oh, yeah. And I just wanted to say, so all the songs, raps, poems, they're all written by men in prison. And I think, you know, just the very basic aim of the record is to show the humanity, you know, of these people. You know, we're all fallible people who have made mistakes, and some of us get second chances and others don't. And I think we need to look at that and why.
Thank you for doing that. Thank you for bringing that.
Oh, yeah.
Your attention to it. I also love that on your website you have a whole menu dedicated to activism and resources and things like that. It's a great place to go if you want to see something that, you know, that's trusty.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, we're trying to make our digital presence as alive as our, you know, my presence in the world. You know, it's hard. It's a whole other bag of donuts, that online world. And I'm a little adverse to it, but it's good to know that there's things to latch on to and connect to there.
Absolutely. And speaking of politics and things like that, I just wanted to mention, I really loved what you had to say about voting when you were talking in your chapter about your relationship with Utah Phillips and how he didn't vote, but you gave him a pass on it. But what you said about choosing the lesser of two evils can actually make a huge impact on some people's lives just within the criminal justice system. I thought that it was one of the best arguments for voting that I've ever heard.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for listening and reflecting it back. Yeah, I think we've become such a nation of narcissists, you know. We're all sort of lost taking pictures of ourselves, and we I think that transfers into our politics too, you know. It's like we think it's all about us, but in fact, you know, this business of democracy, or, you know, I should say maybe more accurately, we think it's all about me, you know, but democracy is about the us. It's about the collective, and voting is about serving that, not your own, you know, your own ego. Yeah, so I feel like we just sort of need to shake ourselves back into the reality of, you know, if you're waiting for your own identity to be reinforced by this voting process, I think you're, you know, may be coming at it the wrong way.
So many of your songs just express very clearly, very articulately how unfair it is to experience sexism and racism and historical trauma, any and all forms of discrimination and oppression. I was just wondering, does channeling it into music and writing, does that get it all out for you? I mean, what do you do with the leftovers, and what are some other outlets that you have?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it gets it all out, but it sure does help. Yeah. It sure is healing to say it, you know, what you're processing inside of yourself and what you feel, and you know, the ideas that you have in your own heart and body that you don't find outside yourself in your culture, or these parts of your own identity that aren't affirmed, you know, to put you know, I feel like we need to see ourselves mirrored as humans in order to exist. Like, that's how we come into existence, is to be affirmed by something outside of ourselves. And without that, our existence is very shaky. It's very tenuous. It's anybody's guess whether we're here or not, you know, unless you can be reflected. And so, yeah, I think sometimes for me, if I don't, I guess my instinct along the way was these parts of myself that I don't get reflected back, that aren't affirmed, you know, it's like, I got to put it out there. I have to put, you know, in order to be able to see it with my own eyes, I guess I have to make it, you know, and there it is. Okay. Now, you know, and yes, that feels so much better than just, you know, just holding it all inside. You know, I think that's how we get sick. So even, yeah, I've noticed, you know, writing, even putting things into writing that I never sing or that I never mail to that person that I was writing to, just saying it, even in a room alone, is healing, I think.
I felt that way too. And talking about getting it all out there, what made you want to look back on your life and write a memoir at this point?
Well, for one thing, just to change it up. You know, I've written hundreds of songs, and I just wanted to try to explore a different kind of writing, see if I could do it, you know. And another just real practical reason is I have two kids now, actually, and I have been realizing these last few years that I need to be home more. I just kept rolling with the touring, the constant travel thing, and it got harder and harder on my family, and it took me a little bit of lag time. I find I have this reoccurring theme in my life of the lag time of figuring things out, or I eventually realized, oh geez, I gotta think of some other way to work that doesn't involve living out of hotels, because my kids miss me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I miss them, and it's so hard, as any traveling parent knows, to come in and out of the family system. The transitions are hard, it's just such a strain on everybody. So yeah, writing a book was like my oblique strategy of how to stay home and still be an artist. Yeah.
Did you read any other memoirs that inspired you before you wrote yours?
I did. I read a bunch of memoirs, and it was cool. I hadn't kind of gotten into that genre before. I was exploring it for practical reasons, and I loved everyone that I read, and I read so many different kinds. It was cool. People telling their stories, I enjoy.
I was wondering if you would tell me a little bit about what it was like to record this audiobook. You narrate it yourself, which is wonderful. I am so glad that I went with the audiobook.
Cool.
And I'm so glad that you narrated it yourself. It's just made the experience like so much more whole. Tell me a little bit about what that was like.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad to hear that you're digging the audiobook. I've heard that from a few other people, and it's really done my heart so much good, because honestly, the recording of the audiobook was traumatic. It was literally, I don't know. Do you think that everything in my life would have prepared me for that scenario? You know, I mean, I wrote the damn book, first of all, and I thought, okay, that's the hard part. And it was, you know, emotionally challenging to do that, to put it on paper. And then recording studios is certainly not, those are spaces that I'm familiar with, that I've recorded a lot of stuff over the last 30 years. So when I sat down to record the book, I didn't think about it at all. I just didn't even think of it as a thing that I would even be confronted with. I thought, okay, for the next 4 days, 9 to 5, I read the book, okay, and then I sat down and I panicked. I just completely panicked. I didn't see it coming. I felt, I just felt like this is too much. This is too much. I can't just speak this level of intimacy into a microphone for anybody with 1095. Like, I can't, what am I thinking? What am I doing, you know? It was really, I was sweating buckets and I was freaking out. And I'm glad that that's not how it comes across.
Oh, gosh, no.
When you listen to it.
It's so
pleasant.
I was
terrified that, oh, that's good. I guess I realized after the fact, because I was reeling from that week of recording the book. And it was very hard to get up every day and go in and sit in that booth and start reading again. And I realized after the fact, I was like, what just happened to me? Why did I freak out? And I realized, like, when I'm writing and creating art, the mechanism that I have for doing it is I pretend I'm alone, you know? I pretend that there is nobody listening, and that's the only way I can do it. You know, this memoir was a whole other level of intimacy and sort of exposure. And when I sat down to speak it, you know, I felt like, you know, all of that game of pretend was over, and I was really confronting, you know, going to another level of sharing and exposing myself, and it felt very, very precarious.
So who are you listening to now? What are some artists that you are excited about, either on the Righteous Babe label or not?
Oh, yeah. Well, we just released another Peter Mulvey record on Righteous Babe, who I love. He's a wonderful songwriter and human and, you know, just an awake dude in the world. So digging on his new record. I'm so excited for Hadestown, another project that came through Righteous Babe and then just sort of swept Broadway and the Tony Awards.
That was amazing. I was so excited
to
see that.
A few months ago.
Yeah.
So they're, I know they're making a whole other Hadestown recording now, the cast recording of the Broadway production. So I'm looking forward to hearing that. But I'll tell you, I don't know. I've been so busy as any working parent, you know, that I don't get a lot of time to just, most of the music that I ingest is through my 12-year-old daughter these days. So I've been listening to a lot of Billie Eilish. That's who she's obsessed with. And I think she's pretty great.
I do too.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Ani DeFranco, singer, poet, activist, CEO, and much, much more. Read her memoir, or as I recommend, listen to the audiobook, which she herself narrates, and catch her at Salmon Fest in Nemilchik tonight.
Shape, your shaved head, I recognized your silhouette as you walked out of the sun.